Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
And today we have...
I'm Felipe Leme from the Android Frameworks team.
So, all right, welcome. Frameworks again.
Yeah, how did that happen?
We're trying to even out the balance between tools and framework.
Felipe sits probably 20 feet from it. I should say stands. It's a standing desk. I liked it today. We were arranging to come over here and... he IM'd me to see if I was still in the office so that we could walk over to the recording studio. You could look past your monitor and see me, but I think IM is just faster to engineers than actual physical movement.
Plus, you're usually in meetings, so you probably just assume that you're not at your desk.
Yeah, but he's like a two rooms away, so when I look on the monitor, I just saw that picture of him on the other room that was like intimidating other developers. Like, hey, chat is watching you. So I didn't see the real chat because it was one monitor.
That's true. Your team has created these life-size cutouts of you for intimidation. Is that like a scarecrow?
I don't know what it's for, but I have noticed that my cardboard cutouts are much better at my job than I am. Okay. They never blink. So onto the subject. Felipe works on, among other things, actually it'd be interesting to find out what else you've done on the framework team since you have been there for a while. Felipe is responsible for the autofill stuff that came out in Android O. So that is primarily what we're talking about today. So give us the escalator pitch of autofill. What is autofill and why does it exist?
So autofill, that's an interesting question. So basically, let's just give a little bit of history. I joined the team back in 2015, I think. So I work on some smaller projects for N. And then for O, I was approached by my product manager and my manager, and they say, hey, we have this problem with we have apps out there called Password Managers, and they are very popular apps, and they are being using the Accessibility API to do their jobs, and they keep coming to us and say, hey, the Accessibility API is kind of it's not a good option for this. Can we optimize the Accessibility API or make it faster or make it simpler to use? And then we told them, I don't know if they told that or not, but basically we thought ourselves, well, the Accessibility API is not really the tools for that, because the Accessibility API is meant to be a tools for people that has problem that they can access their phone, to help them to use the phone. They were not meant for a password manager.
Actually, that same sentence could apply to so many things that people do. Accessibility service was not really intended to do the thing that you're doing, but it tends to be
the
door which people go.
Well, it opens up the phone completely, right? They can read structurally what's on the screen. They can manipulate the widgets. It's the perfect backdoor
to basically derive
the phone. Yeah. It's been used for all kinds of things.
Testing is a lot of it, right? Because they need to get access to all this stuff.
But you have to give apps access to accessibility services, and that's super dangerous. I mean, a malicious app could do horrible things with it. So it's one of those things you kind of don't want to do.
Yes, that's true. That's one of our motivations. Basically, we decide, okay, we need to create a new API that is designed specifically for autofill. So not only the performance is going to be better, but the privacy and security is going to be better as well. So we came out with this framework on O, and basically, just to give a quick overflow on how it works. So basically, this framework... Now, it involves three processes. You have the app that's being autofilled, like Gmail or some apps. Gmail is not sure it's a good example because usually you're already logging on Google. But let's say you have an app, your app that has a username and password. So this is what we call the app being autofilled. Then you have a password manager app that has the data to be autofilled. And now with the Android autofill framework, we have an intermediate, which is the Android system that hosts the Android framework, which is a mediator that will make things faster and more secure. So basically, not only the data that we sent to the service is optimized, but they always go through to the system. So the data never flows from the app to the password manager or vice versa. So for example, let's say you have a web you have a login page, we get the view structure, the app sends to the system. The system sends this structure to the service, and the services say, okay, I have this username and password, or maybe credit card information or some stuff. So they send that data to us, but we don't fill directly. We show a window to the app. Actually, it's a window that's hosts on the system process, so the app doesn't have access to that data yet. So only when the user select option that box, then we send the data to the app. So that's an improved security model because the user is aware of what's being showing and what's being autofilled. So there's less interaction between the app and the password manager. So it's different than the accessibility service approach, where the accessibility approach, the service has access to everything, and now they only have access to specific pieces of information that would be useful for auto-filling. So it's more secure, it's faster, because we're not sending everything, we're not sending events all the time, etc.
Okay, so how does it work in the case where, so there's some random password manager that has all the data that they want for this autofill experience, but my experience with password managers is they're really draconian about making you log in all the time to make sure that I'm still me. And sometimes I'm not sure, but I do have to go through this horrible login procedure to authenticate myself with that. So how does autofill get around that and just ask that app for the information?
So that's one point where from the framework point of view, we don't know. I mean, we don't care. Like, from our point of view, we send the data to the service, and it's up to the service to decide if they want to authenticate every time, if they want to use their fingerprint.
The service you're talking about here would be a service registered by the password manager. So yeah, LastPass, for example, yes, would register a service that you then call to say, hey, this app with this ID wants to get these fields, password, name, and credit card. And then you would, if it responds to you, you would offer this UI, basically.
Yeah, well, actually, we don't tell them if it's a username and password, because we don't know. Like, the framework doesn't have any logical heuristics. We just pass along the data that comes from the app. Then the password manager, yeah, usually I say service because they're implementing the autofill service. But yes, the password manager will look on the data and say, okay, I recognize there is a username and password in this view structure, and I know I have this particular user has information for these fields, so they would send that data over. And now they have the way the API was designed, they could send us the data directly. For example, here is chat and password is 123456.
Oh my God, that's, I can't believe password, you told everybody.
And or they could send us something, like they could send us a remote view that says click here to authenticate, for example. So they will have a mechanism where they can either send us the data directly, or they can send an intent sender, a pending intent, where that we can launch when the user clicks something.
Okay, so they could force me to go through authentication with them before they actually send the data back for autofill.
Yes, so okay. We provide some APIs where they can do this sort of things. And that depends on, just to give an example, autofill with Google, which is the implementation that we provide on the Google device. They don't require it. They don't re-authenticate. Once you're logged in, they already give you the data. But there's some case, like if you're using a credit card or some more sensitive data fields, they might ask you the CVC of credit card or some other second form of authentication. But this, from the framework point of view, this is transparent. It's up to the autofill service implementation to decide how they're going to handle.
Okay.
How does the app authenticate itself to you? So, you know, let's say I wanted to write a web app that pretended to be someone's bank, right? And then I would just ask the password manager to autofill so that I could actually get the real password. Let's say I was, you know, a criminal. I assume that doesn't work today because these password managers in the browser will say, well, this is the wrong website. I'm not going to give it to you. I'm only going to autofill for that one website. But an app isn't like that. So do you store the app ID, or I'm trying to understand how an app can say, oh, actually, I happen to be the web app, I'm sorry, the Android app for this thing that your password manager already has a password for the website. Will it just give me access to the same passwords, or do I have to create new accounts?
So this, again, it depends on the autofill service implementation. What do we do? Actually, we provide some guidelines on how they should behave in this case. So one thing we tell them is there is another framework or API called Digital Asset Links, where the apps can establish a secure relationship between a domain and app. And that was first created for the link, I think on Android N.
App links.
Mm-hmm. So they can use that for domains as well. So ideally, on the long term, it would be nice if all apps, okay, I'm this app abc.com, and I have I can set up the domain link. So whenever the app tries to use a web view or something that loads, hey, I need the passwords for this website, the autofill service or password manager, they will try to verify the association between the app and the domain. So if the association passes, they should autofill right away. If it doesn't pass, there might still be legitimate cases. For example, you might have an application, a financial planner that might want to log in on your banks. So what we recommend the password managers to do is they should warn the users to say, hey, you're using this app ABC and it is trying to access your website XYZ. Do you trust this app? So that's something we recommended the services to do, and we have a curation mechanism where we're going to be certifying or curating some password managers to be listed as kind of certified password managers that go through all these security recommendations. And then this is one of the kind of checks we do. We want to make sure that they warn the users if an app is trying to access a different website that they don't have access to. So right now this list is empty, but soon we're going to be adding this new list. Basically, when you go to your settings and go to autofill settings, there's an option that says add a new service, and that launches a curated list on Play Store. Currently, it's empty, but we are working with many password managers and make sure they comply with all these security requirements, and then we're going to be adding them.
I see. So the association is left up to the password manager. It's not something you do, but you're encouraging them to make it really clear to users that they shouldn't just blindly let whatever app asks for this get it.
Yeah, that's correct.
Got it.
So I want to follow that up with a more complete example to walk through. But first, satisfy me. Earlier, you said on a Google device. Do you mean specifically we implement this on Pixel devices and everybody else is on their own? Or do you mean if they have Play services running on that device, that's where the service is launched from? What really? Well, I guess it'd be O and forward. But like, what do you mean by Google device?
Well, the OEM can set up what would be the default autofill service for their device.
Okay.
So I know that on our Google device, like Pixel, Nexus, we set the autofill for Google. But the other OEMs, they could set their own or set a different one. So that's why I'm
so it's not restricted to Google to Google manufactured devices.
No, no. Yes, any OEM can set the default autofill service, and we have some requirements. Like if they're setting a autofill service or password manager as default, they still need to do some opt-in. Like when the user first try to. Basically, let's say you log into an app where your password manager, default password manager, knows that can be autofilled. They should pop up a dialogue like opt-in to make sure the user wants to set up the service or disable themselves. So we put some restrictions because we don't want to force these options to the users. But we, on the other hand, we would like to have a default option so the users could start work on that and maybe they can select a different password manager or different alternative later. But
okay. So a complete example, can you walk us through, so let's pretend that I have an account on a hotel website. It takes a username and a password, and I have that hotel's app running on my device, and then I run the app and it wants to take advantage of autofill. Like, what are the steps that it goes through all the way to, let's say, the default service on a Google device, and then back to the app? Like, what's the information that gets sent along to the service? What do we then send to the password manager? Like, what's the flow of bits?
So the first thing we, one of key design decisions we made on this framework was that there shouldn't be no opt-in or no effort from the app developers to support autofill, because we don't want to, if we require the app developers, like hotels.com in our case, to annotate the app for autofill, most likely would take a while for these developers to adopt, like many times they don't know or they don't have time to do that.
Yep.
So we decide to make it works by default, because otherwise, because that's how the accessibility works, right? If you have an app, you don't have to do anything for accessibility. Most of the time, that came from the framework.
This is why I saw all your changes in textview.java.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, because basically all this, actually, given a little more technical answer, all these APIs depends on Vue. Like, there's some methods that we add on Vue and a new manager. So in theory, the Vue has to be implemented out of Vue, but we did that on the standard views, like text view, edit the test, even checkbox or combo box. So we implement on our basic views, and we also have some APIs that app developers using more sophisticated views could implement as well. But let's get back to the simple case of hotels.com. So most likely they don't, ideally, we also added a new attribute on view called autofill hints. So ideally the developers, they could say, hey, I have a hint here that this view is a username and this view is a password.
Okay.
It will take a while for these hints to be adopted, but we are doing some outreach. Like, we're telling developers they should do that, and Tor might confirm, but we're trying to work with some integration with an Android Studio that can tell, hey, this is a text field or a password. You should annotate with autofill hints. But anyway,
yes, the idea, you'll get some warnings from Lint, you know, on your layout widgets when we see, hey, this looks like it might be eligible for an input type. So there already is a input type property on TextView, which is used for something slightly different, for picking a keyboard, for example.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's overlap there, right? So if I'm saying, hey, the type of this input field is phone number, right? The purpose of that initially in Android was to give the user a better keyboard, which has only digits, possibly maybe some parentheses, right? So you don't have to search for the numeric keys. So, but could you use those kinds of attributes to guide autofill as well?
Yes, you can. So let's go. Let's say on this example of hotel.com, let's say the app didn't change anything for autofill. So the way autofill works, autofill is triggered the first time a view is focused. So let's say you go to the login page, there is a username and password. So once you click the username field or the first field you tap on, we're going to scan the view structure, and we're going to generate nodes for autofill. There is actually, we are reusing the same data structure that I was using for the Assist API, which was used for Google Now or Google Now on Tap. So basically, we're going to scan the activity, and we'll see which views are important for autofill. Like, we have some heuristics that tell, okay, this is an edited text or text view, or this is a layout with a resource ID. So basically, we will create this view structure that has some informations, and they will have information like the resource ID, the input type, if the app sets that, like Tara said. So basically, we'll collect all this data, and we'll send to the service. Now, the services or the password managers, they will have to figure out which views are autofillable. So they might have a risk, like, okay, there is an input type and it's a password. So this is a password. Now, if this is a password, most likely the previous edit text is a username. So this sort of logic is up to the service. So generally speaking, this out of password managers have some pretty good heuristics. But ideally, the app itself should give us the hint. Like, if they tell, hey, this is a username, this is a password, then they make their lives of password manager much easier, and there's less chance for them to get the wrong information.
I see. So there are new attributes you can set on widgets that basically set some sort of type for the password manager.
Yes.
To make it more deterministic for them to fill in the stuff. So when you pass along the information, so you create this node, you'll get the view hierarchy, what, in that entire activity window, or siblings of that view that they just clicked on and down?
No, it's the whole Windows. Yeah.
Okay. So then you get all this information, but like not everything, you know, that separator line is obviously not important. So then do you boil it down to
maybe
anything
that
allows
completed
input?
You never know.
Well, we do have some heuristics to, we added this, you're familiar because I remember you're complaining about the name, but we have this important for autofill methods. So basically, there's also the app developer can also tell this view is important for autofill or this view is not important for autofill. And by default, it's the value is auto, which means we have some heuristics to define if the view is important or not. So for example, if it is a layout container, generally speaking, we don't send the container itself, but we send the children. So we have some heuristics where we try to send a very optimized version, like,
okay,
we don't include everything.
Okay, so you just send a list of these nodes with basically the metadata of, as you were saying, the resource ID and any other information you think is relevant.
There's a resource, a positioning, right, the boundaries on screen.
Okay, so I'm getting back to the flow again. They click on the box. Since you implemented the stuff in view and edit text, it basically receives that focus event and figures that out at that time, and then it contacts the service synchronously?
It's slightly more complicated.
Sure.
When you click on focus, actually the view calls, we have this autofill manager running on the application. So the autofill manager is the one, is like the bridge between the app and the system server. So when you click focus, we don't generate the view structure itself. You click on focus, it calls the autofill manager. And then the autofill manager will say, okay, I need to, there is no session, there is no autofill workflow on this activity yet. So they call the service to say, I need to start a session. So the autofill manager makes a IPC call to the system server. Now the system server will create a session in memory for the duration of that activity. And then they will call the activity manager service to start, to trigger this information to start our autofill session. Mm. And the autofill manager itself is going to call this dispatch autofill. Basically, we'll scan the whole view, the hierarchy.
Yep.
And there is another method. They're going to call dispatch provide autofill structure. But that's the method where the app is called to fill out the fill structure itself. So the focus trigger autofill But then there is going to be a callback that say, hey, I need you to fill out this structure, and that's the structure that we're going to be sending to the service.
Okay. And all of this is done synchronously on the UI thread.
We have some calls. Yeah. Well, yes. We noticed we were making these calls on the UI thread because that's the same mechanism that was used for accessibility and yeah. IMEs. We might need to do some optimizations because this could be done in that background, to be honest, because it's just these are just callbacks. So we might be working on some optimizations for that.
But. Right. Well, so all of this is local to the client so far, but then once it has the information about the nodes, then it sends it off to the service, which is what encapsulated in the session that was started by the activity manager?
Yeah, so the service, yes, there is a session on the autofill manager service, not activity manager itself. So the autofill infrastructure running on system server has the data that has the connection to the service and the connection to the app,
yep.
And they will keep it. So basically they call the service will send the data back, and then we will display a UI, but that UI is shown the system process. It's not on the app itself.
What UI?
Like the one that shows, hey, I have this username for Chat or Philippe.
Okay.
So the user, so when the services okay. tells us, hey, here is the username and password for this activity, there could be a list, right? You could have imagine you could have multiple logins or multiple emails. So we'll show this list.
I see. Okay. All right, so it's not the auto. I was thinking you were like duplicating the UI from the application to do the username password thing, but you're just it's a meta dialogue that says, "Here's the account that I have information
yes, so,
for."
So yes, we show our own dialogue that is positioned in the below. It's like a pop-up window.
Yeah,
and that we also provide some APIs because sometimes this might conflict. Let's say your app has some it's caching the usernames or email address. And they have their own pop-up windows, and then we show ours.
Yeah,
there might be some overlapping. So we have some. This isn't one part where app developers can optimize the apps. They can. We have some callbacks, so they could register a callback listener to the autofill manager, and the autofill manager will gonna say, "Hey, we're gonna show the autofill UI on this view. We're gonna hide the autofill UI."
Yeah.
So they could hide or show their own properly. So there's some integration that the app developers can do, but this autofill UI is a different. It's a pop-up windows.
Okay.
From the system server that's overlaying the app.
Okay. So this dialogue, I'm still trying to understand the flow here. So we contacted the service, the system service pops up the dialogue, but it doesn't have the information from the password manager.
The app sends the data to the system server.
Yeah.
The system server keep that data locally, and yeah. then they do some sanitization, and yep. then they send to the service. Then the service reply back.
Service, the autofill so, service, yeah, the be password, it the password yeah, manager yeah, yeah, yes, or the Google yeah. service or whatever it yeah, is, right?
Let's just call password manager to avoid confusion. Yeah. So
sure.
the system server sends the data to the password manager.
Yep.
The password manager returns the data asynchronously to the system server.
Asynchronously. I did want to yeah. make that point, like not all of this stuff is synchronous, otherwise it yeah, would yeah. be a bad experience.
And then then the system server will show, we know, so basically there's also basically there's also some communication between the activity and the system service tell which app is currently focused.
Yep.
So we'll know which one is focused, and we will show this autofill UI underneath the focused view with yep. the options that apply to that particular view.
Okay. All right. So then we show this thing, and then the user selects the account that they want to fill in from, and then there's probably a final step for that data to
yes.
come back.
So when the user selects something, then the listener for that UI is also on the system server. So
yep.
the system server will know, okay, the user select this data set. We call data set the collection of data sent by the puzzle manager. Now we send this data set to the activity through some internal process.
The system service has all the information it has at that time from the password manager. It doesn't have to go back on another round trip.
No. Yes. We have the information, and there is an object on the activity has a binder object that
yep.
we do this communication between system server and the activity for autofill.
Yep.
So we're going to send the data set to the activity. And then the activity, they know, okay, I got this data set for, let's say there is a username and password. So there's going to be IDs and values for username and password. But they will find which views correspond to each of these IDs. And then they will call, there's a new method called autofill that we introduce on null. So basically they will pass this autofill value to the view.
Yep.
And then the view will update their value accordingly. And we will also change the background to show the user that the data was autofilled.
Okay, so we have a stubbed out method, I'm sure, in view, which is then overridden in places like edit text.
Yes, that's
and
right.
If they have a custom view, then they need to override this method and do something about it.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Cool. And then that's, and then the data is there and away they go, and then autofill steps back.
Yes.
All right.
So this is the normal workflow when the service, the peasant manager sends the data, the full data.
Yeah.
But there might be the case where the peasant manager might tell us, hey, I have this data for these views, but the user needs to authenticate first, for example. So instead of sending the data set, they send us an intent and some remote view. So on our dialogue, it would say something like tap here to authenticate, right? And when they tap that, and we get the data back, we have this listener for that view, for the window on the system server. And at that point, we will know, okay, this is a data set that requires authentication. So we're going to trigger the pending intent. In that case, we don't go to the activity, but we trigger the pending intent.
Yep.
Then they could show like their own dialogue, oh, click here to authenticate, or use your fingerprint to authenticate. Yep. And then we have some other callbacks that they can call us and say, okay, now the user authenticate, and here's the data to all of you.
Got it. All right. So I think that was the complete flow. Everybody got that? There will be a quiz. Did that all make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I kept sitting here thinking, how do I break this? You know, no, I was thinking like, can I spoof this little pop-up? You know, I was sitting here thinking, you know, I keep coming back to, you know, the how does the app prove its identity to the system? And I guess it's the digital app link, you know, but does the password manager get to ask for that, or is that something you pass along as some of the metadata you pass to it?
Well, we tell them that this app is coming from this package, and actually for the digital access link specifically, that's when we're using WebView. So the WebView, when you're using WebView, we have a property called web domain that tells this is a domain the web is trying to access. So
the web view, I totally see how it would work. I'm thinking of an app, right? So if I have some app that, you know, tries to be a bank app, and if I were to make, you know, a fake game, right? It's some sort of puzzle game, I get people to install, but I make the package name be some bank name, you know, could I pretend to the password manager, you know, that could I basically trigger it by having a text field, focusing it, and, you know, using some social engineering or whatever in the message saying, oh, I need to log into the high score list here, tap to continue. Could I pretend to be the bank? And how do you just pass the package name of the app?
We pass the package name of the app. And one thing that we recommend them to do, they should verify the signature of the package, right? So let's say you're running, let's say you have your bank app stored on their system, and now you sideload an app that looks like a game, but it has the same package as the package, the bank app. So they were supposed to check the signature and say, hey, you're trying to autofill. I'm getting requests from this banking app, but the signature doesn't match what we have recorded. So they should either
I see. So password managers really should not just trust the package ID. They should look at the certificate and compare.
One of our basic assumptions that we tell them, you should not never trust any data. Even though we are sending the data that's supposed to be trusted, the app could have faked the data. Sent a different package name. So we came to this principle, like never trust the client, right? So you need to verify whatever information they're telling us. You need to verify and either deny or warn the user, like, hey, this app is trying to do something, but the signature doesn't match. Do you trust this app?
I see. So it's really very important for users to pick good password managers that have done this correctly. Because it sounds like it's very easy to write a password manager, but maybe not so easy to write a good one.
Yeah, that's true. And that's why we have these guidelines. Like when we document, when you go to the documentation, we have all these guidelines for security. And in order to add password managers to the list, the curated list, we have some auto tests where we want to make sure that they follow these guidelines.
Okay.
So this brings up an interesting point. There's actually two completely separate API services for autofill, right? There's the developer side, which it sounds like by default, app developers don't need to do anything, although they make it a better experience by providing some hints. And then there's the service side, which is completely separate, and that's for the password managers, and it's the default service that Google provides. Can you talk about each of those API services, like what the different types of developers would need to pay attention to?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So basically, back when I was on that workflow that I explained early on, yes, we have that Autofill app, app being Autofill, then the password manager or Autofill service. So for so the password manager, it's a very small market. We know there might be maybe something between 10 and 20 apps that implement that, and we have a closer relationship with both of them because we want to make sure that they do their job right. For the normal app, the developer, their main issue or main the main way they can optimize their app for autofill, basically, they should tell, hey, I have these fields that are, can be autofilled, like username, password, or credit card data, telephone number. So they could use this, what we call autofill hints.
Yeah.
But we also have the other way around. They can also tell us, this view is not important for autofill, or this whole activity is not important for autofill. So let's give an example, Hangouts. If I'm sending an SMS to someone, early on when we were developing the APIs, I was getting a pop-up that has my own email address. Doesn't make sense for me to send a SMS or email message to myself, right? So this is one case where the app ideally should mark, okay, don't try this view is not important for autofill, or this whole activity is not important for autofill. So we have this attribute called important for autofill, where you can mark a view or a view and its descendant. So for example, if you want to disable the full activity, you can go to the root view and say, this is important for autofill equals no, exclude the descendants. So that would disable the automatic autofill workflow. So basically when the autofill is not important, if you click and the user taps something, we're not going to be triggering autofill. But the user can always bypass the decision. So I don't know if you realize, you can long press edit text and select an autofill option. In that case, we do what we call a manual autofill request. And in that case, we show the whole view hierarchy. Or like we don't respect the non-import for autofill in this case, because we know that the user is requiring autofill. And there's also a flag. We tell the service that the request was manual. So there might be cases where even if the app didn't do anything, the service might not, the password manager might not identify what should be autofilled in a. Let's say you have a banking app that you know that the password manager has the data for you, but the password manager cannot figure out where the username and password are. So if you long press on the username and do a manual request, we're gonna send a flag to the service to say, hey, the user did a manual request on this field. So maybe the service could show a pop up that says, what is this field? Is it username, password, telephone number? So we have this fallback mechanism where the user can force autofill.
I have a slight tangent because of something you said in there. So you said that if, you know, the app might have said, you know, you can't, we don't want accessibility here, but you could long press and then you will let them override. And since you worked on text field, I don't know if this is a problem in Android, but it certainly is a problem on the web, you know, where some websites decide, I don't want to allow you to cut and paste in this field. Recently, I think I might have been paying property taxes or something, and I wanted to paste in my bank account number. And they had disabled paste, so I had to type the number, which is not helpful. I don't understand why this would be useful at all. This is an anti-feature.
I get that on like banking sites.
Yes.
It's a combination of they wanted to be highly secure and they're not very sophisticated at software.
Yeah, that's understating it a lot.
Yeah.
So I would love to be able to long press and say, no, let me paste anyway. I want to override whatever that could say. I know this is paste, not autofill, but is this, you know, do you have any good news for me in this department?
That we need to ask a chat's team.
So moving on.
You looked at the code. So again, it might be that Android apps can't turn off paste. I hope that would be true. Copy, I could get. Like maybe they don't want to let people copy,
sure.
but paste.
Yeah, but paste seems more like a user opt-in.
Yeah, if you're a web developer or if you know any web developers, please tell them not to do this. Sorry, end of tangent.
One hint to someone, I saw someone say, when you go to this website, just try to fill the confirmation first, because usually they disable the copy and paste on the confirmation, right? Like if you have your first username or email address or account number, it's okay to paste, right? So ideally, you should type on the second one and paste on the first one, but still a bad user experience, right?
I hit one this morning. It's a web form, again, a bank.
Yeah.
Hate my bank. Where the only way it made me do the confirmation of password thing, and the only way that I could enable that field was after entering it from the previous field, I had to hit carriage return. Like there was no way that I could click on the field, and I kept erroring out on the form because it wouldn't let me enter the value.
It's probably a JavaScript click handler for the enter.
Yeah. I have no idea. It's so bad. It's unfixable.
This week, and Chet and Tor complained about web apps.
Sorry, we stopped you in the middle of...
It wasn't middle. I patiently waited till he was done explaining that. But, you know, it was the long press for the manual override. So we were talking about the importance for accessibility. A flag, I incidentally heard you name that.
Well, not sure I was there at the time.
Well, we name it this important for autofill is similar to the important for accessibility. So a lot of what we developed on this framework was based on the work done for accessibility. Yeah. So we follow the same patterns.
Yeah, it's consistent. Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Okay, so that's on the app side. Actually, it's not completely on the app side. So what are all the bits that app developers need to pay attention to if they want to make a better experience? One is hints about what the fields are called. Oh, I had a thing about that. Actually, before we get to that, I have noticed in my experience with autofill on Android, as well as autofill, you know, going back in Chrome for years on the web, where it's really good at never exposing my password. So it often gets the other information wrong because it's got heuristics that don't always work. So, you know, my username will show up in a couple of different places, or my address is repeated or in the wrong place or whatever. Like, I understand how that mistake occurs, but I'm impressed that the password is never exposed in plain text. So like, does it just nail down the heuristics of that very specifically?
Yeah, I would guess it's their heuristics, because they know, I would say they know that a password field usually has some sort of a mask that says it's a password field. So they wouldn't feel that that's a strong heuristic. Like, okay, I have a password, I suspect this is a password field, but this is a plain text. Like, they're not using input type or something that tells that it's a password.
Yeah.
But that's up to them. Like, they will have to have this sort of heuristic.
Okay. Well, it seems to work. It's just one of those mechanisms, like, I'm happy to see my passwords not showing up in plain text all over the place by mistake. All right. So,
can we do a quick poll? Who here likes to have passwords hidden by default?
Let the record show that nobody raised their hands in the room.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a different issue. Like, okay. I do like to see what I'm typing. Again, my banking site won't allow that, but...
yeah. Do we know anyone who works in the toolkit who could look into this?
Oh, this is not an app. This is web.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. Okay. So we have the hints about what the information is. We have the enable for autofill or
not important for autofill.
Yes. Important for autofill. We have the autofill method that they need to override if it's a custom view, so that they can do something with the information that came back from the service.
I would say the three more important ones are the autofill hints and the import for autofill, as you mentioned, and the digital asset links. That's important as well.
The what was that?
The digital asset links, where you can do the association between a web domain and your app.
Yes.
Even if your app doesn't use a web view, even if it's a normal app that is a native app, there might be the case, just to give an example, autofill for Google, they use the same data that that's used from Chrome. But when you let's say you log in your app using Chrome, so Chrome is associating the data with the domain. They don't know about what Android app your organization works has, right?
So wait, are you saying that autofill with Google also works as autofill inside of Chrome? Is that so? If I save a password in Chrome by Chrome's default password manager thingy, does that also then complete in Android for sites that are using autolinks? Or I'm sorry, digital asset links?
Yes, yes.
Oh, so that's great.
It is the same. It's the same backend, but they if the app doesn't, if there is no association, then you might need to type again, and then.
Okay, so this is for the case like the earlier example where I have an account on the hotel website, but I have that hotel's app. Like somehow that app needs to communicate that it is associated with that website so that it can get the appropriate account data.
So that's why it's important for the app developers to set the digital asset link. So that way the password managers, either autofill Google or third party, they can consult the API, the digital asset links API, and do the association so the user doesn't have to type twice.
Okay. A quick public service announcement. We have support in Android Studio to help you create these digital asset links. So if you go to the tools menu, I think there is an app links assistant that walks you through the whole flow and lets you upload it and test it and all that stuff. So, end of PSA.
This podcast has been brought to you by
Tools
Android always Studio. Tools. Yeah. Always. Okay. So that was two, right?
So back to our checklist. The three most important ones is autofill. Autofill hints, important for autofill, and digital asset link association. So that one should cover, I don't know, 95% of apps.
Okay.
Now there might be apps where the next one I would add is listen to callbacks if you're showing your own pop-up window. Yep. So if you have your own cache in the username, for example, you should listen to this callback, so you can hide your pop-up when the UI out of UI is shown. So that would be the fourth one. And then there is the case for if you have custom views. Just to give an example, if you have a let's say you have a date pick, you have a credit card checkout page where you have the credit card number, you have a expiration date, and the expiration date you're using date picker. So, but you don't use the date picker directly. You have edit text that when the user click, it pop up a date picker, then the user selects something, then you change the value of the date edit text. So in that case, that's one case where you need to have a custom view because your effectively your expiration date is the edited text, but the edited text by default is a text. And in this case, you need to tell the password manager that hey, this field is a credit card expiration date and it's type date. So we have this out of field types by default. Most of the cases text, but it could be a date. So you could do some customizations where it's okay. This is a type date. So when the out-of-field service sends us a date, you have to convert that to your internal date, and vice versa. When we, when the out-of-field service send a value to the service to the Android out-of-field framework, eventually we're gonna call out-of-field to your view, sending a value of type date. So we need to convert that.
So you're I can't just set a hint on a text field saying this represents an expiration date, a credit card expiration date, and then that hint will be enough for the machinery to make the conversion?
It is enough. Okay. So let's say credit card number, right? So if you say okay, this field is a credit card number, yeah, then that should be enough because service is going to send you a text and it will fill that.
Yeah.
Now, when you say I have this text field, this is a credit card number.
Yeah.
It's expiration date.
Yeah.
What is the format to expect? It's going to be mm/yy or mm/yyyy, right? So there is no, it would be hard for you to tell the service how to autofill that date as a string. So that's why we have a type that's called date. So you could say, hey, this field, this view is expecting autofill value of type date. So they could send us a date that has the proper month and year. But then you need to override because by default, like if you go to the edit text and call get out of field type, for example, they would return type text.
It would be nice if you had additional hint types where I could say this is an expiration date dash yyyy dash mm dash date. You know, like if you could actually have
like formats.
Because there's only going to be a couple. There's going to be the world and it's going to be the US. Right. That's simply what it's going to be, right? It's going to be month, year, or something, but usually it's not date, right? And, you know, whether the year comes first or the month comes first is sort of...
We're going to want Chinese calendar conversion, Hebrew calendar conversion.
That's obviously true, yeah. It's a year of the chicken.
I wonder, like, when you're talking about global operating system, like, there are a lot of different cases you have to handle.
No, but I'm thinking expiration dates. I don't think there's that many formats for those. This week,
Tor
makes
offhand.
A bold prognosis. Okay, anyway...
This is something like because when we launched the API, the framework last year, we were focused most on the common cases like text.
Yeah.
And we provide support for others, like even a combo box. What if you're using spinners, for example, for the year? So we have a way to tell, hey, this view is a type list, and then the out of field service, the app could say, here are the options for the years, what each index. Is which year is on each index, and then the out-of-field service could tell, okay, this is 2020 is index 3, so they would send us a list out-of-field value of value 3 for a type list.
Yeah.
So we have support for other fields, but that's something that could be improved.
It makes sense. I just know that credit card auto-completion is my favorite autocomplete in the browser, right? Because it's one of those things that I don't have my wallet right here. But then it goes, oh, actually, I recognize you have a card here. Click, click, click. And it's pretty great. All I have to memorize are the three digits of the CVC, right? Maybe on Android, though, it's not as important because I guess you typically don't want to be entering credit cards directly. You probably want to use something like Google Pay or any other kind of in-app payments for this stuff anyway. Or you just want to say pay. You don't actually want to go and find out.
That's ideally, but that would require the app developer to be integrated with the API, right?
Yes. So
that's one part. Like in the future, like long term, ideally, we shouldn't have to have out of field. They should be using like a smart lock for log username passwords. Or
I was going to ask about that next. Actually, perfect transition. So how does smart lock relate to all of this?
They so Smart lock, it's more like a...
Smart unlock, I guess, is the more important part of that.
Yeah. Smart lock or YOLO or open YOLO, this is what the approach we think app developers should have, because they shouldn't have a login at all. Like they say, yeah, I'm using this mechanism for authentication. That way the user, we don't have to worry about autofill or even selecting anything. We just say, you want to open a login with Smart Lock? So that's our long-term vision, but that's something that requires the app developers to, is a kind of opt-in, right? You need to explicitly use the APIs.
All right, I think we have two upcoming episodes, one on Smart Unlock and one on how to do payments.
This is all new to me. Is this a mechanism where I carry that person's eyeball around in my pocket so that I can sort of do the retinal scan at any time that
I need to? Well, eyeball and thumb. You need to do both. It's much more secure.
Yeah. Okay. So we were talking about the API surface for app developers. I think we covered it, right?
Yeah.
So then on the services side, I guess this is the what you said 10 to 20 apps in the world, including Google.
Yeah, the services side is, I would say it's more complicated because, the API contact between the autofill framework and the services is really small. Like they have to implement one, they have to extend an autofill service class, and there's some callbacks methods. On the ideal world, if all apps set the hints for autofill, then their job would be really easy because they'd just say, hey, let me look for the autofill hints and then I will return the right information.
Yep.
On the real world, a lot of apps, most apps doesn't do that yet, so they need to have their own heuristics.
Right.
And that's where one area where they can compete. Someone might be better than others, or they might have other features, like they might be sharing password with family, they might have different kind of encryption on their vault.
Yeah.
So basically, we provide some APIs, but we give them a lot of flexibility on how they're gonna implement their work.
Okay.
And we keep adding now that we have this peer developer review coming or release.
Whoa! You just pre-announced something. Actually, this episode is coming out sometime after peer preview ships. So. We'll pre-announce it in this recording, but nobody's going to hear this until after it's out. What are the new bits there?
On P, we are actually, from the regular app developer point of view, there hasn't been practically no change at all for autofill, but we add a lot of new APIs or new features for the password managers. So from the end user, this is going to be good because the experience is going to be better. There's been a lot of scenarios or some corner case situations where they could not get autofill working properly. And we get feedback from them, and we add the new APIs or new features that will make their life easier. And then for the end user, this is going to be better because now they're going to be better. There might be apps that couldn't be autofilled before; they're autofilled now because we're adding more functionality to them and some things like that. Right.
So it's just better trademark. Yeah. I always boil down the new stuff in each release into the two buckets of developer features and user features, especially since I think about the what's new in Android stuff, which we tend to focus on developer features instead. This sounds like, it is kind of developer features because the services need to implement this stuff. But I think for most people in the world, it's basically user features just to improve the service.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. There's a lot of new developer features, but for a very specific set of developers, which is the password manager developer.
I mean, a different way of looking at it is that you got the API right in O. There weren't things you had to, we've got to add this in P.
Sure, right? Sure, we could do that. There's never been a case where we have gotten an API wrong, so it's just given.
Yeah, well, that's good because that's more people who can take full advantage.
Right. I mean, in particular, it's good to nail the basics when it first comes out because while we have the ability to continue iterating in future releases of the platform, that means that users then have to have that future release to benefit from those. Yep. So if you at least get the basics, if you got the basics right in O, that means that everybody, as soon as they're up to the O release, they get autofill functionality. And the stuff that you're doing on the services side, that's stuff that can be updated independent of platform releases, right?
Yeah, and we have this feeling that we got a good API for O, because especially the feedback we get from the password managers, they said the API is good, it's easier to use than accessibility service, and we didn't get any response like, I cannot use this new API because of this XYZ. I mean, there's been some limitations, or it's But we've been working on that, but none of them was like a roadblock, or like, okay, we cannot use the new API. So
they've right.
been happy so far, and on Peel, hopefully it will be even better because we add all these small features that they were asking, but for the end user, it will make a big difference.
Cool. Have you had much interaction on the app developer side, or is that just an audience that we don't directly speak to because there's
no Yeah, I have interaction as well. Like we have this Google I/O presentation last year that yep. was actually, we covered many areas, so it wasn't focused just on AutoView. And we had a DroidCon conference presentation in San Francisco yep. that was... And again, whenever I have this sort of conference or presentations, we focus on the developer side, because for the password manager
side, the app developer side,
because for the app, for the password manager, it is so small that we can just reach it to them directly. So we have this sort of outreach. We keep sending like blog posts or other DevRel communications, because we wanna, we even though it works well with most app out of the box, it would be nice if the app developers annotate their apps for AutoView, because not only will make the password manager's life easier, but we would be even optimize the workflow, so we don't need to trigger AutoView when things doesn't make sense to be AutoView.
Yep.
So, yeah, we got to work on those lint rules so that it can suggest, hey, this, you know, in fact, if we had a lot of those good heuristics you talked about, it could even try to guess based on your layout what those hints should be. That'd be kind of nice.
Yeah. Because one thing we decided actually early on the when we were designing the app, we were thinking on just use the input type, but we didn't for many reasons. Like one was that this is supposed to be a layout for the keyboard hints, and also that only apply for edit text. And out of field, we need something to be generic. Like we could have a spinner or some other data that could be out of field. So we decided to add a complementary out of field hints. But a lot of times, like the tool, like Android Studio, could say, okay, I have this. This is a password field. They could set or suggest they use the developer. Say, hey, this is out of field hints equals password, right?
So we can even use some heuristics that maybe you don't want to do at runtime. So for example, you can have a label, a text view, and a text field that it points to, and it points through the label for attribute, right, which was added back in API 17. Right, so you can say this text field, you know, this is the label for this text field. That's used for accessibility, and you know, in the tool, we can look at what the label is and what it is in the default locale. Because at runtime, it might be something in, you know, who knows, French, right? And so you don't want to have the heuristics have to know all these languages going. Oh, whatever the word for username is in French, right? But we can certainly look in English and go, oh, I think the default string for this is username. So this is probably username, even if the text field is just unlabeled. Right, so we can actually use some of the structure of the layout and the corresponding labels. Or do you actually pass normal text view data as well as metadata? Do you follow the label for links and pass that?
I don't think we do anything for the label for, but that's a good suggestion we could add. What do we do? Actually, one of the changes we made on P, if it is a text view, we pass the name of the resource ID of the text. So even if they say, because when they get the label or the text, it could be saying username in French.
Yeah.
But usually the resource ID is something that could be on English. So we're passing the resource ID as a string. That's something we add on P, but the label for that, maybe we could add that too.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. I think we've kind of auto-filled our time today. Is there anything else that we forgot?
We can always longer press and ask for more.
That's right.
Have we missed anything?
No, I think that were the main points. Yes.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Cool. Thanks.